Pickaxe.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Triforce.
Who's there?
Who's there with me today?
I thought you were saying, like a little viewer just hoved into view. Oh, hello, little viewer, little listener.
Look how cute you are. Oh, look, I'm mussing up your hair.
You little rapscallion.
You little
As a kid,
little
when someone
bitch.
Would muss up my hair. I was very particular about my hair. I never had curly hair, so it wasn't really very muss upable, and it just felt a bit weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a fan. Gotta say, felt intrusive.
Yeah, it's belittling.
I guess that's the point of it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Welcome back into the 20th of May. We're recording this. I've got my jab booked at the weekend.
Hey, nice.
First, yesterday,
get your 5G upgrade.
Yeah. I need to do with connecting to some of the Wi-Fi. Incidentally, a friend of mine has had a magnet implanted in his finger.
Right.
His
for what
index,
reason?
No, his ring finger. For in order to detect magnetic fields.
What do you mean? What? So when he did, it sort of pulls towards something if there's a magnetic field.
He just got tired of having to like scoop up his change off the counter. Yeah. So now
he just passes his hand over the...
He just passes his hand Magneto style and just fucking gets it, yeah.
So wait. So this little magnet, if he feels it tugging, it means there's magnetism around because it's being pulled towards something. Is that... How else does it work?
Yeah. It's quite like a common thing, apparently, where you implant like a tiny neodymium magnet. And you can do some YouTubers have done it. Like I see Cody's Lab, who's this guy on YouTube who is just a crazy asshole who lives out
I've watched
in the middle
Cody's
of nowhere.
Lab. Yeah.
He looks like Duncan. He looks like just a regular nerd.
Like Duncan's hairier, crazier brother, I would say.
And he subs really nice, really comes across as just this nice, innocent, nerdy guy. But he has like a iron mine or something, a tin mine.
Yeah.
He goes mining. Yeah. And he's got like, he just does chemistry experiments. Well, not experiments. He does sort of chemistry, I guess, in his garage. And and so a few YouTubers have talked about it. And I don't know if it's all that strong. I don't think you can like, I think you can probably pick up a paperclip.
I have a few questions. Number one.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions.
What are you going to do if you detect a magnetic field? What's the plan? Do you run? Is it dangerous in some way? Is it like, what's the deal with, why do you need to know? That would be part one. Part two, is it to detect if something is ferrous? So you come across a metal and someone says, gosh, I wish I knew if this metal was ferrous. You can pass your hand up and go, it is. Like, what's it for?
Yeah,
what is its
utility
day to day?
It's a party trick. It's an icebreaker at parties. By the way, did you know that that's ferrous?
A great party.
Wow. Holy crap, you're interesting.
This guy's the life and soul.
I think it is a party trick, though. I think you could sort of do the thing, like you can lift up a paperclip and on the end of your finger, people are like, what the fuck? How's he doing that?
And how often is that going to be? How many times are you going to be able to do that to have people go, wow, that's so cool?
Once with each new group of friends.
Yeah, you're going to have to make a lot of friends. Maybe it drives you to make new friends because your old ones will be sick to death of your fucking magnetic finger trick. You have to keep making
maybe.
New friends.
Oh, God, look at Lewis with his old magnetic finger trick.
Yeah, you'd
again.
Get so sick of it after a while. The first time you'd be like, wow. And then after a while, you'd just
be like, Neo, do me one. Get out of here.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know, like... There's a lot of these weird ideas out there. I think the idea really was that it was this for future stuff. It was like it was almost like a RFID. It's like your cat's chipped. So when you find a missing cat, you can just scan it, and it's like it tells you, oh, this is Agnes from 33, Willbottom Lane,
Brilliant.
Or whatever.
No,
you
know, you've
just take her home. But I didn't really, God, I was just accidentally subconsciously recalling your address. I forgot your dog was called Aggie.
Imagine you had like a double or dare I say a triple situation there, because you know, like, well, I'm sure this is the same the world round, but like in the UK, for example, there's lots of like duplicated names of places and stuff, you know? And like, what if you lived on Willow Bottom Lane and I also lived on Willow Bottom Lane, but like in a different like part of the UK? And then Lewis doing that docks both of us at the same time.
Shocking.
Like, oh my double. Fucking God.
Shocking.
Well, that happened to me, didn't it?
Unintentional double-double.
In New Zealand, I booked a place to stay in New Zealand and drove to it.
Yeah.
And I drove to the wrong fucking Tower Heights or Tower Road. And it was the other one was like 100 miles away.
Yeah. Was it one of those situations where you got the first one, it was the wrong one, but it was super nice, and then it soured your experience at the other one because it wasn't as nice? You got there and you're like, oh shit, I wish that the clerical error would have gone through and I could have stayed at that other place, which looked a lot better.
Well, I'm sure I've told the story before, but we got there, it was late. It was already like 11 p.m., right? And so and it was sort of dark, but it sort of still vaguely matched the photos because it was on this really steep hill. You know, we turned the right directions to get there. We went into the place. It was like, you know, and then we sort of got there and this house was like deserted, obviously. So we thought, perfect, you know, there's no one living here. It must be like the Airbnb rented house, you know. And so we looked around for the key, which is supposed to be in this box, but there was only like there was a box there on the house, but it was a fuse box once we opened it. And so then we realized we must be at the wrong... It took a while for us to believe that we were at the wrong house because so many of the things had confirmed that it was okay along the road, you know, because we've only got like a paragraph description. It's like, go up the hill, turn right, turn left, get to the house. It's number 13 or whatever. We did all that just fine. And so it took a while for us to think, for someone to come to try and make that logical jump of, are we actually at the wrong hill road or whatever?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
It's funny that stuff doesn't really happen much these days with Google Maps and everything like that.
No.
Like I know
so
that
it should have
it
like
used to be,
a little pin, yeah.
Yeah, it used to be so hard. If you go away somewhere and you were staying out in the country or something, it was like, to get to the property, you must follow the following like 20-step elaborate directions. Like there was all printed. I used to have to do this where it'd be like, take the left off the A15. Now you must look for a very narrow right turn. And you think, well, which, you know, and if you get lost, you have to retrace the whole thing. Like you have no idea where you are. Mm. And it was a fucking nightmare sometimes finding places.
Then again, like nowadays, I don't know why they didn't have like some sort of postcode system like we do in the UK, because nowadays you just whack a postcode in. And I'm so fucking lazy with it as well. Like, you know, yesterday I went to Hat Films' warehouse.
Right. They own a warehouse?
They rent a warehouse, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right. They rent a warehouse.
What for? Yeah.
For filming.
Filming stuff and storing stuff.
You know, like all those videos of them like vacking trot and stuff like that, and then covering him with like eggs or
right.
cream and shit like that. They do all that there.
Wow, that's
yeah.
awesome.
So Smithy's birthday today. So we recorded Smithy's
birthday
video yesterday. Thanks for Smithy. and the idea was to cover him in.
You're welcome,
fake beans.
Lewis.
Yep, you're welcome. Have a great one.
Thank
Lulu.
You. So they put down some paper, some plastic, and a paddling pool, like they're preparing for a murder scene, you know.
Yeah.
And then got a bucket full of a 6-pack of baked beans, attached the bucket to a gigantic plank of wood, and then wanged that over to like a pole that would hit, you know, stop the bucket before it hit his head, but it would spray all the beans down. And they brought themselves, you know, two extra 6-packs of baked beans in case the first one missed or whatever. And so, you know, I went to this, they hadn't been to the warehouse since Christmas either, really. But I was there for Jingle Jam. We did the painting stream there and stuff. And it's just kind of a bit, It's kind of a bit shit. Like I went to the bathroom and there was like, I noticed there was like this big dead spider, like in the corner, right? But not on the floor, like on the shelf. So it's like a bathroom with nothing in it. It's just a toilet and a sink. It's like empty and a loo roll sat there on the shelf, right? But next to the loo roll was this giant dead spider. And when I looked closely, I noticed it was like surrounded by like what looked like gravel. And I was like, oh, but I looked close and I realized it was 100 more dead spiders, like a whole family, like of different sizes though, and weirdly all clustered in the same, like they'd all died in like this concentric circle around themselves. So weird and horrifying. And obviously when I told Smithy about it, he went in there, scooped the whole lot into his hand threw it at me.
Good God.
Oh my God. Good God. What an ass. So that made me that's the kind of just a Hatfield's fun though, isn't it?
Yeah. You know?
God, so yes, that was Hatfield's yesterday. It was really interesting to like hang out with the guys, mess around, talk to people. I had a great day actually. We went to Hobbycraft. We bought some like paints and Bob Ross paints, and we painted along with a Bob Ross video.
Oh. Nice. Was so, it fun?
Yeah, it was really fun.
Now,
it was really fun.
No, because my kids and I, they were showing Bob Ross on TV in the evenings a while back, and we would sit and watch them because it was very relaxing. You know, as everybody's watched Bob Ross, it's very relaxing and you can just sort of enjoy it. And he's such a personable guy, and by all accounts was a lovely guy. We've spoken about him before.
Yeah.
And I did wonder, if you had all the oils and everything, if you followed along, would it look like Bob Ross's painting? Like if you really did it, would it look even close?
It would always resemble it for sure.
You're
like, because you're just using the same, roughly the same shapes and colors.
Well, you can find out
right?
So by watching the Hat Films video, which is probably out now. It's probably coming out today, because it's his birthday video, right? So you can buy the paint. You can buy the Bob Ross paint set officially.
Oh.
Bob Ross branded paint set, which is the stuff he uses.
Apparently, his son never was never interested. His son does painting and stuff, I think, but he was never interested. In the limelight. Yeah, he didn't want to carry on the legacy. He's very sort of like private person and doesn't want to be on TV or anything like that. But
I watched a documentary about the Bob Ross sort of support team and all of his art, and it was all like all of the art that he did on the show and all of his, because he did like two practices for every show as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he had three of every one, and he did like 60 or 100 shows or something. So he's just like 300 paintings of his, and they were all just shoved in this sort of storage unit kind of in somewhere in the middle of Middle America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looks like sort of the place where aliens come down.
Right.
It looks like some Roswell shit, right? And they had little office off the side where they would run his little business, right? And
mm-hmm.
so they coordinate his paint sales and his brand and stuff. And it's like a couple of very all-American nice ladies, I think, in there who really run the whole thing. And it was very mom and pop, very wholesome, very strange. And I'm assuming it's still similar now. It must be, right? But they had all of the paintings because there is this huge demand, this idea that people love Bob Ross. They want his paintings, right?
Yeah.
So there was this documentary about, where are all the Bob Ross paintings? It's on New York Times, actually. I've just found it again. I recommend it if you're interested, because it's just so interesting to like see the little behind the scenes of his what his life, I guess, was like, you know, with the people that he knew. And
yeah, it is
was
always
very
interesting
very
to
wholesome.
See like what the behind the scenes is for some of these people, right? Because obviously you're presented a version of the of the person, but sometimes that person doesn't end up being like that at all, right? Like, but I think Bob Ross, by all accounts, was pretty much just a nice, regular sort of guy, right?
Like, it's you know what I think is quite
telling?
He never
got cancelled or anything.
Right,
like,
but what's quite telling is when someone is nice like that, the praise for them is effusive. You know what I mean? It's like never ending. People saying, just the nicest dude. Like Roy Hodgson, football manager Roy Hodgson. I know you guys don't like football, but he's been a football manager for like fucking 50 years or something like that. He's been all over the world. He's retiring this season, semi-retiring. He's not retiring. He's saying, I'm stepping back. He's like 73 or something like that.
Sure.
And he's saying, I'm stepping back and I'm just chilling. But I'm not going to say I'm never going to come back, because he said he hates it when people say, oh, that's it, I'm retiring. And then 2 years later, they come back. Feels kind of sad. So he's stepping back from football. Everybody's got a story about how nice Roy Hodgson is, like, and how nice it was to work for him and everything like that. It's a shame that those people stand out so much. It makes you realize how unpleasant most people must be to work with in many of these fields, like movie stars and all the rest of it, and, you know, people, musicians and everything. It's like, oh, the nicest dude. Oh, and they tell you this story and you think, yeah, that's nice and everything, but what are the rest of them doing? Like, they must be complete fucking assholes if this is representative. He held a door for me. You're like, yeah. This is it? Like, come on. What are the rest of them doing that's so unpleasant?
I feel like in a general sense, there's I read a lot about people who, like, you musicians, actors. Like, I watch a lot of, documentaries and read biographies and stuff like that. And to me, in a general sense, it seems like you can kind of categorize people in two camps. You've got people who are very good at what they do, but they're not aware of, like, the overarching kind of, like, meta around what they do. You know, like, they're in it just for that, the sheer passion of craft. You know what I mean? Like a musician is only interested in creating music. Like, and to that musician, it doesn't even need to be perceived as good by other people. As long as it's good to them, they're more than happy with it. And those people always seem to be the people that are regarded highly by their peers, right? It's like
Tiny
this person,
Tim.
This person's really creative. They're really nice to hang out with. Our process for creating music was just like drinking a lot or like smoking a lot of weed. And then we just create this music together. And it was a really fun experience. And then the other camp is people who are super aware of like fame and all the trappings of fame and how to get ahead and what the things you need to do to get ahead. And like they're much more aware of that side of it. And I think that turns people generally into monsters as well.
Yeah,
that
I
are
think
impossible
you're right.
Oh my God,
to work
right.
You got to climb over people to.
Yeah,
to,
yeah. That's right. You have to leave a pile of bodies behind you to get ahead in some of these industries for sure.
Well, I think those are the, like you said, those are the two options. I think there are certainly people out there who are super famous and apparently also super nice.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people who perhaps weren't, let's say you're not the best at what you do.
I'm sure, like, of course there's going to be examples of that. I'm just saying in a general sense, you can kind of like, you can see where the divide
is,
you know what I mean? Like it's kind of crazy.
There's an element of PR. There's an element of good PR. I think people can be quite clever and put on a face that people make them out to be this, you know, are such a super good dude, blah, 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 when they've just done the right things when they needed to.
Yeah.
You know? But at the same time, I think, with Bob Ross, like you said, Sips, like he was uninterested in the value of the paintings he was doing and the business idea.
Yeah.
He just wanted, like, I think he never wanted his paintings to become like a commodity. He wanted to teach people how to paint. He wanted them to get invested in the journey, in the process. He wanted to give them a chance to do the experience, that quite relaxing feeling of painting, right? Which he, you know, tried his best to open and give people. Not, it's not cheating, but it's like techniques that it's strangely interesting, like how you can do something where you just dip a brush, a strange shaped brush, in like some brown ink, mix it around with some green ink, splodge it on the fucking canvas a bunch, and suddenly it looks like a load of trees. And it's kind of amazing, actually, when you do it and you're like, fuck that. If I blur my eyes a little bit, this actually looks good.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like,
you got to do that bit with the brush that he does where he goes and whacks it on the side of something. Like that,
beat the devil out of it.
I think there's a lot to it though, because again, it's one of those hobbies that is it's a long process of evolution, at lots of trial and error. You know, like these techniques that he's using on the shows and stuff, they're things that he's just had to try and try and try and just got better at over time. But can you imagine, for like every one painting that he's done that looks amazing, there's got to be hundreds of like crappy ones, right? That where he's just like, I tried this technique on this one and it was all right.
Apparently, he did 10,000 paintings. Oh, no, 30,000 paintings in his lifetime.
Jeez.
30,000. And so there's at least 1,165 in cardboard boxes in the company's nondescript office.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's crazy, eh?
It's really interesting because, yeah, he probably, but his wasn't about looking at something and copying it. It was about using brush techniques to create something that looks like a natural world, because the natural world isn't always going to be like, it's not straight lines and just fixed styles. No. You know, a tree will look sometimes like it's fallen over, or it will be uneven. And that will be represented in the way the randomness, your brush hits the canvas, you know. And you know, I'm sure that the ones that you paint aren't, even if you're copying him, aren't going to look the same, but they will still look, it's surprisingly impressive. Like, yeah. how it works. And I guess I felt like I hadn't really watched a Bob Ross episode before the whole way through. I'd sort of seen the memes,
you, like,
and I
knew
kind
of them
dipped
and
in
stuff,
and out.
Yeah.
And I also felt like I didn't know whether people really did copy along, because I felt like I did find it like quite quick. We weren't pausing it or stopping it at any stage, and he does move quite quickly, and it's obviously made for television. It's made to be done in half an hour, so he does zip along to the next bit, and so you're like,
sure,
okay,
yeah,
I've given up on
these
mountains now, go to the sky. But actually, in a sense, like, that's quite good, because it's like, fuck it, I'm not gonna worry about that, I'm just gonna move on to the next bit.
You know,
what I mean?
So here's my question about Bob Ross for you guys. Okay, I've been watching The Office recently, and Andy, the character Andy the Nod Dog, right?
Yeah.
He's recovering from anger management. He was a very angry guy, and he went through anger management.
Oh, you're up to that point, yeah.
No. I've gone way. I'm on like season 7 now. But he went through all that, and now if something pisses him off, he sort of gets this weird look on his face, because he's thinking about, you know, calm blue ocean, like serenity now, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You look at someone like Bob Ross. He's like, you could imagine Bob Ross getting really angry and just like smashing easels and throwing paint at people and screaming, you know, and getting furious, because you can imagine anybody getting really angry. Even the Queen. I can imagine the Queen getting really fucking angry.
Well, this is the fucking wrong latte. I wanted the fucking avocado one, you fucking stupid bitch. Fuck you.
Throwing a crown at her and shit. Exactly. Do you think that Bob Ross had a really tumultuous, bad time where he was like super angry and found something that makes him calm?
He did. This is true.
Really?
So in 1942, he dropped out of school in ninth grade, which is quite young.
That's 14.
Yeah, and he worked with his father, who was a carpenter, but then joined the army or air force, I think, and moved to Alaska, where he spent 20 years as a drill sergeant.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
So he was yelling at new recruits in the fucking frozen north, and he was such a hard ass, apparently, that he earned the nickname Bust 'em Up Bobby.
Oh,
wow.
My God. Can you imagine?
You fucking maggot! Get the fuck out of my fucking bunkhouse! You fucking
take that happy little clown, you little bitch! What are you doing?
This is not a happy fucking accident!
Yeah, it seems impossible that he's the same person.
Get your paintbrushes out and make sure they're clean! Will you call this a brush?
Oh, man. That's crazy. I didn't know that about Bob Ross. Hey, wow. So my wife watched, she watched The Joy of Painting for the first time in her life recently. She was the same as Lou. She'd heard of Bob Ross before. She knew about it, but she'd never actually watched an episode. And all the episodes are on BBC iPlayer on Channel 4, I guess. Yeah, so every episode is on there if you want to go back and watch them. And so I was like, I'll put one on. Like, we didn't have anything to watch, and I was like, they're pretty chill. Like, they, you know, they're meant to be kind of relaxing. You just watch this guy paint or whatever. And she was so stressed out the whole time. She was like,
"Whoa,
he's gonna screw it up. Oh, what's he doing? No, you can't do a rock like that." Like, she's going every time. But then you kind of watching an episode with somebody like that, you kind of realize, hang on a sec, like, you know, she's kind of right in some ways. You know, like, there's definitely points in an episode where you think, you've gone too far, Bob. You're going to fuck it up. Like, it's, you know, less is more sometimes. And he always comes back to a bit that you think is done. And you're just like, he is going to fuck it up. It's going to look stupid. But it always ended up looking really good. I don't know. It's just,
I think the lesson
the
is
magic,
it doesn't really matter. It's the journey of the painting. It's the relaxation. I mean, can you imagine? I've never done it, but I would love to get the oil paintings like the Bob Ross set and do a painting like you did, Lewis. I would love to do that.
You can do it.
Because I think it would be very relaxing. How can I do it?
It costs like 10 quid to get the fucking fucking paint Bob Ross paints it. Any art supply store sells it. The Bob Ross painting make hundreds of millions a year.
But you can't expect that you're gonna produce something like Bob Ross. You know what I mean? Like
it'll
look similar, but it'll have your own twist on it. You know what I mean?
Oh yes.
His techniques. You know, you're talking about a kung fu master here,
right?
And
right.
You're just a young Padawan, so like,
yeah, he's got the muscle memory for fucking happy little trees. I'm a first timer here.
Exactly.
But I think after a couple, you know, he's done 10,000. You know, you're gonna have to catch up. You know, you got a lot of work to. You can't expect to get it first time, PFAX.
Yeah.
But it's a very cheap to enter. You know, it costs you tenner for a canvas, tenner for the paint set.
Yeah, we'll fucking
you
do
know,
it. Fucking
there
do
you
it.
Go. Get your happy little clouds going. I recommend it. Honestly, yeah. it was very fun. Surprisingly fun to follow along, and surprisingly interesting to create something with the way he does it. Really interesting.
It's weird because recently I've been doing, I got a greenhouse and I've been doing more stuff like in my garden, but I've been getting more interested in, because I've had some just minor successes, but I've never really spent a lot of time gardening or caring about plants generally, you know, like I've stopped to admire plants before, as you both well know, but like I've never grown my own stuff or anything. And this year, because we got a greenhouse, I just thought, you know, oh, whatever, like it'll be fun for the kids. Just plant a couple of things, see what happens and stuff. And we've been really lucky. We had lots of seeds germinate and grow into stuff that we've then had to put into bigger pots because it's growing so much and getting so big. And I've just been a lot more interested in sort of like gardening stuff. And, you know, how to grow food. And I've been looking into like how to be more self-sustainable and stuff through it. But a big part of it, like aside from all that, is just how relaxing and nice it is. You know what I mean? You're just doing something that's not necessarily at a computer. You're doing something that's not necessarily like linked into, you know, social media or what everybody else is doing. It's just nice to have your own space to do your own thing and not really be hassled or bothered by it, and you learn, you know, you'll make mistakes for sure, but I feel like painting is a lot like that. I feel like making your own music is probably a lot like that. It's there's a lot of like little things that you can be really creative with, you know, and it's just, I think it's really good for you, like to have sort of a hobby like that.
Totally, you know? Totally. I feel like old folks have taken it though as their own and made it the stigma, right? Yeah. Like it doesn't feel like, it feels like gardening is this thing that you do when you retire.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously the old folks have found that it's good. It's relaxing, it chills them out, because otherwise the old folks get very crotchety.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And this helps them, you know, mellow out a bit, you know? Yeah. It's in a sense, it's like things do have a stigma, like Fortnite, you know, probably teenagers don't want to play Fortnite because it's for babbies, you know?
Sure,
it's like
got that.
Or Minecraft, you know, it feels like, oh, it's for kids. I'm not playing that game. And as a result, it gets this kind of attachment to it. And the same thing with gardening. Like, it feels like something that isn't cool. Or for some reason, you're not allowed to do because it's only done by old folks. But then again, you do need the boomer garden. And a lot of us young generation don't have our own space to do gardening. Yeah.
But, right? Well, one thing that interests me about it as well as not only I never set out to grow my own food. I was like I didn't even think of it once. I just wanted to, you know, dabble around, try to grow some plants. Really just wanted to grow some, like, you know, some like basil and whatever, like, you know, herbs for cooking or whatever, just to see if I could do it, sort of thing. But now I'm at the stage where like we're growing cucumbers and like peppers and tomatoes and stuff, and this stuff is all starting to grow.
I know.
And not only that, lots of like little lettuces and stuff. Like, basically I've been feeding Terry recently entirely from the greenhouse, which is nuts.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
and
cool.
Super good for him too.
He's eating better than you.
Yeah But it's super interesting. Like I've learned like more about like composting, and I like the whole system of like, you harvest stuff and you eat the bits that you would normally eat, and then you cut all of the shit off that you would normally not eat, And then you can just turn that back into like really good soil for next year.
Mm.
And I fucking love that. It ticks like so many boxes for me, like the whole recycling thing. And I don't know, like it's just, I feel like I wish I'd found out about all this stuff sooner.
Back in the composting bin, dump that on the composting. Yeah, I mean, I remember doing that as a, I mean, we do still have that like in our apartment complex, you know, we have a compost bin. Yeah. All the food waste goes into a special bag and it goes in the stinky bin. It's a classic like thing now, but I assume that's all getting composted somewhere for some good. So I'm assuming it's not just being shipped to India and dumped on the side of the road
not,
or whatever.
Probably not.
But yes, I there is this strange like fear though that you're going to fuck it up, because I feel like every time we bought a house plant or whatever, it's died, and so everything's, oh, I don't have green fingers, I wouldn't be able to keep something alive. Yeah. But actually nature is pretty tough, and like
it's unbelievable.
Plant some cucumber seeds and manage to remember to water them every other day. Well, I mean, they'll probably grow.
The other day I had a little cucumber seedling that I went in the morning to take a look. It was like totally flopped over, and I thought, oh, whatever, like it died, like I guess I just didn't do it right or whatever. So I propped it up and put some water in and thought, you know, at least like I can make it look like it's still alive. And now it's fine. It's like grown. It's like bounced back. It's insane. It's such a satisfying feeling too, you know.
Do you
it's,
wonder if all this stuff like planting things, like Sips is enjoying this stuff. I'm not saying we're in the twilight years of our life.
No.
We're a little older. So the things that we're starting to enjoy now are things that when we were 20, we would have thought, gardening, lame.
Of course, you know, it's not something like, I mean, if you get into it when you're young, fair enough. Like, whatever. I was not into it when I was young. I was just doing other stuff. And that's fair enough. You know, the life is like that. You know, we're conditioned a lot socially into certain things and stuff too.
There's always things that are lame.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
Ever since we were, ever, like when I was at school, Star Wars was considered lame.
Right. Really? Yeah,
it just was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, it was for nerds. What? Right? That was how it was.
Oh, yeah. But Lewis would wedge it every day for his love of Star Wars, probably.
Whoa. Yeah. What school did you go to?
The School of Hard Knocks, baby.
It changed. Like, initially, it was kind of this nerdy thing, wasn't it? And then it became
Star
very mainstream.
Wars?
I think nerdy stuff in general kind of did, like, a complete U-turn and became cool at one point, right? Like gaming culture
and
everything.
But the Bob Ross thing, I'm sure a lot of people considered Bob Ross lame, and then it had this big renaissance, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, with Twitch and everyone loving it, and it's all very, I think it's universally thought of as a good thing.
Yeah.
It just seems like you can't lose with Bob Ross, right? No one's learning anything bad. No one's getting anything. It's not causing any trouble to anyone, is it?
No.
Right? Like, it's only helping people. Unless more kids are drinking fucking turpentine. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't think of anything bad that's come out of Bob Ross.
People drinking turps was a big thing in the 50s. Another classic up-to-date cultural reference from the Triforce podcast.
Yeah, we're right on the money. Another thing that I've been thinking a lot about, though, because I've been doing this stuff and thinking about growing food, the sort of convenience of modern life, you lose. It feels like you know, just looking at it kind of like whimsically or whatever. You feel like you lose something along the way, right? Sure, you get convenience, and sure, it's great that you can order like 20 hamburgers on your phone and somebody delivers it to your house or whatever, but I feel like you're robbed of so much along the way, right? Like there's so many things that you could do that are actually kind of easy to do and really good for you physically and mentally to do around like perhaps growing your own food or
why
even
not
getting
cycle
interest
to the hamburger shop
getting
instead?
Interested in it or whatever. But like the whole sort of like quest for convenience, like I feel like tons is lost along the way. It's kind of sad too.
I think the convenience is a good thing if we're cutting down on stuff that's unnecessary.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're just cutting down on things that are actually kind of relaxing and nice to do anyway, is that really making it more convenient? I guess.
Yeah, I feel like you're for all this time that you're saving yourself for things that you don't want to do or whatever, and freeing up time to do the things that you want to do. you're potentially just missing out on a lot of really enjoyable stuff along the way. You know what I mean? Like really satisfying stuff, yeah. fulfilling stuff.
Look, you're not replacing that saved time. Yeah.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you've got to, the saved time has to be replaced with something other than just watching fucking reruns of The Office.
Exactly. You saw something that not only that makes you happy, but like replenishes like your soul and stuff too, right? Like it's, and I just don't know. Like I've spent years and years playing games, and I like playing games, but, and I've said this before, if all I did was play games and nothing else, I would be really miserable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that 100%
Six
that
would be a dull boy.
That could give you all of the satisfaction you need in a life. You know what I mean? Like, you
Indeed.
Have to, you definitely need a balance. And
I mean, even if all Bob Ross did was paint, I don't think that can give you a complete life. If all you ever did was tend your garden, I think that would be. You've got to have a mix of things. The cornucopia of life shall be yours if you take a first stumbling step down the hill of passion.
Yeah, oh yeah.
One thing I read was I think if only the birds in the forest who had any talent were singing, the forest would be silent or something to that effect.
It's beautiful. So,
make it up. You get the gist of it.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like, just try your hand at this stuff, man.
Yeah.
And just you might find that you quite like it, and you don't have to be. You don't have to have green fingers.
No,
to fucking...
I went in with the mentality like, oh, this is something my mom would be interested in. This is dumb and everything. And I was really surprised. I'm like. I feel like converted. Like, I feel like this is something I would like to spend more time doing. And it just, again, it's you figure out how to do stuff. You can, there's like tons of resources for learning how to do this stuff or whatever. You know, there's people who've already made all the mistakes and can give you advice on it. There's books, like, oh my God, it's crazy. You can do all of this stuff and you could probably end up saving yourself a lot of money. And the time that you spend doing it doesn't feel like a waste of time either, because you're just ticking so many boxes for your physical and your mental. You know, it's nuts.
Indeed.
It's really good.
Yeah. Let's try your hand at creating something, whether it is a song, a poem.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I should say not even just gardening.
A book,
you know, like
a blog,
painting, writing, whatever. Just do something that's
don't let other
different.
People or don't worry, it won't be perfect. Don't let other people tell you.
Yeah, I mean look at Lewis's fucking Choose Your Own Adventure book. I mean, that far from perfect. He still tried. Yeah.
We got a lot of shit.
Got him.
Oh my God.
Sibs, you and me got a lot of shit for not letting Lulu read that.
Oh my God.
Let her read the book!
No.
I was like, no.
So
really?
It was so good. So there was this complete mix of feedback.
Oh my God, man. It just goes, there's no accounting for people's bad taste, is there? It's crazy.
It was great. So I loved reading all the feedback. So there was like, I'd say there were predominantly like two camps. There was the people who thought, oh, this is great. I thought this was really cool.
Yeah.
I want to hear more. And there were the people who said, oh, this is so funny.
Man, I was really just fucking with you. Like, I thought it was, like, pretty good. I'm glad that you did it and stuff. I'm sure it was fun to do. Like, I'm just messing with you.
I thought there were some nice descriptions in there. For real. Like, there were some nice descriptions. I just was in the mood for taking the piss out.
I hadn't really intended it to be funny, though. I sort of did it a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I didn't do it deliberately funny. So, like, the first... reading all these people saying, oh, man, this was like everyone's bad D&D character. I laughed so much. I was like, I didn't really intend it.
It was meant to be serious. You guys are getting serious.
But I'm not put off by it.
No,
you know,
no.
I'll carry
good,
on.
Good.
No,
yeah,
know.
Don't let the haters get you down, brother.
You can come over. You can come over and make fun of my garden if you want. Like, that's my. You come over and
you
be like,
this
a fucking
cucumber.
Idiot. You don't fucking mulch like that, stupid. You're an idiot. Like, you can do that if you want.
We also, when I said that bands don't make a lot of money touring or lose money on tours, a lot of people responded to that saying that was wrong. I have done quite a bit of reading.
That was ill-informed, honestly.
Well,
that was...
I think you're wrong, and I'll tell you why. For example, Lady Gaga was bankrupt after her Little Monster tour or whatever it was called.
Right.
There's an article all about it. The cost of the tour was so great that she ended up going bankrupt. $3 million
Okay, yeah, but I mean, that's a little bit different because that's not somebody just going up on stage and going through their catalogs of songs and saying, we love you, Detroit, and stuff. This is somebody with, like, million choreographed dancers and pyrotechnics and stuff. So yeah, you can see how that
would... But for most really big acts like that, the cost of the tour is going to be very steep. I think her tour was an exception because it was like unbelievably elaborate. Bruce Springsteen, for example, his tour, he made a lot of money from it because they don't have all the fancy light shows and everything.
Exactly.
U2, when they went on tour, very expensive tour.
He just sat there on a fucking stage.
Yeah, just a dude with a guitar, right? Perfect.
It's like, okay, we need to budget the Bruce Springsteen tour. We're going to need a stool and a guitar. How much is that? We can get the stool for $25.
$2, yeah. Perfect. Like,
I smell profits, Ronnie. I can smell them from a mile away. I think we got this.
So Bruce made a lot of money. However, if we're talking about the top like 0.5% of all musicians out there going on tour, because there's a lot of bands. There are a lot of musicians that do this all the time. A lot of these bands will play very small shows. The cost of going on tour isn't going to be very great, but the amount of money that they make isn't going to be very great. And quite often, with all the costs you have to pay, you know, the promoter and the venue, management takes a cut, all the rest of it, it doesn't end up making a lot of money, and they don't shift a huge amount of merchandise. So if you go ahead and dig into Google, I would urge anyone that said, Tyrion's just wrong, just have a look, because I definitely heard, I was watching a documentary about touring, and this was a while ago, very few bands, like I think that there were very few bands that actually made money on these big grand tours because they made their money from record sales. So because record sales have gone, this was my whole point, is taking away record sales and saying, well, they make most of their money touring now. That may be true, but if you had two jobs and you lost one of your jobs, you're not going to say, well, he makes his money from this one job. Yeah. It's like, yeah, but he used to make money from two jobs. Now he's only got one. So all I'm saying is that the amount of money that artists make from record sales and stuff has obviously plummeted compared to its heyday. There's a lot of streaming. People don't buy albums the way they used to. People don't buy singles the way they used to.
No.
So the amount of money that artists can make is diminished. Ticket prices have gone up, but a lot of that is swallowed up by the venues, by the ticket processing sites and all the rest of it. And
I think they
companies.
Just have to have a good accountant and not be too
right.
Not be too spendy on their
tour.
Most
bands are not going to make a lot of money.
To put on these
only the
really
very big
shows.
Bands. That's all I'm saying. The smaller bands are not going to make that.
Sure, but that's always good. That has always been the case as well. You like, but again, it's that exposure too. You know, like the bands doing like the smaller sort of circuits, like you read about any band, like, you know, like grunge bands or whatever, you know, they would just like stay at people's houses, you know, live in a van or whatever. Like, yeah, no, they weren't making a lot of money, but they were getting out there and they were, you know, performing music in front of people that had never seen or heard them before, and hopefully picking up fans along the way.
And hopefully they would buy some records.
To then become
a
big band.
So my problem is, if they're not making money from the record sales, where are they making their money? Like, if they're not making a lot of money from record sales, where's the cash coming from? That's the question you've got to ask.
Touring,
and there is a big problem with live music venues closing, because not just because of COVID, but before that, there is honestly, look into live music and how many venues we've lost.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real problem. It is different.
It's different all across the board. But the way that people consume music is so different to how it used to be, right? It's like we're still expecting things to work how they did 30 years ago, when things have changed so much. The way that people listen to music, the way that they have access to music has all changed. So of course that side will change a little bit as well. But I think a lot of the older bands, like, you know, like the Rolling Stones, for example, their predominant demographic or fan base are old enough now to pay big money to go see them live.
Oh,
because
yeah.
for them, it's like a bucket list thing. Like my parents went to go see them, for example.
Right.
So my parents were teenagers growing up listening to the Rolling Stones when they were still, you know, releasing fresh albums and stuff and like, at, you know, at their peak. And but, you know, they never had an opportunity to go see them when they were younger. But now that they're like, you know, 65 years old, they can go see them.
I hear Metallica are the big, like a big, always a good show, right?
Right.
Yeah. And that's like a big, it's almost like going to a fucking theme park or something. Yeah. I mean, they've really got it down to a T, and they wouldn't carry on doing that if it didn't make money for people who were involved.
But again, these are very, very big bands.
Yeah, these are huge
have been
bands.
Around
yeah,
a very
of course,
long time.
Of course, of course.
I think Metallica would totally be down for having magnets implanted in their fingers.
Would that not interfere with guitar playing, Lewis? You'd go to play a G and you pull in the fucking
There's plenty of bands
strings.
Out there that that have been going for years that have never broken into mainstream success or anything. You know, they have like a very small following.
But maybe like surgical enhancement would give them this like kind of edge, you know? They could like do like additional, if you like cyborged up their hands,
right,
you know, to like play guitars better or do like the magnets could like, I don't know, give them some additional.
There's that robot
control.
Band. There's a YouTube channel of a robot band. Have you seen them? If you look for robot band on YouTube, this guy's built these robots and he's programmed, like he's got this software so he can put a song in and they will play the song. The robot drummer is super fucking hype, by the way. Go and have a look at it. I can't remember the name of the channel. I'll find it right now while we're talking about
Compressor Head.
I think that sounds right. Yeah.
It looks nuts. They're like an anime. It looks like one of those old puppet shows, like the wooden puppet shows that they used to have in those strange like wooden casings in the street.
But just
watch them
play. They're fucking hype.
Nice.
Okay. I'll check it out. So these magnetic implants. Apparently, it came about because this one guy had a bit of shard of like metal. I think steel lodged in his finger,
right,
and found out that he could detect magnetic fields with it. And so, I mean, magnetic fields, I mean, by that, I mean like you get a magnetic field when you have like a high amperage or like voltage going through an electrical cable. So, for example, if I had a magnet in my finger and I moved it close to the AC wire for my computer down here, I'd be able to detect that, right, because if I got a neodymium magnet and I stuck it there right now, it'd probably vibrate, like, and I could feel it without it having been implanted. But the point is that your fingers are full, like absolutely chock full of like nerve endings, and if you implant a little tiny neodymium magnet in there, it will apparently let you be able to sense that. And I think the reason is, I don't know why. I don't actually, if anyone knows why.
Why
you want to
are
have
people
that.
Putting magnets in their
why do you
bodies?
Need, I mean, it's not like in everyday life.
Purpose.
I need a magnetic sensor. It's not.
There's a fucking
it's
Wikipedia.
Not like people are...
Though magnetic implants can be used to pick up small metal objects, the main purpose of getting an implant is in order to gain sensory perception of magnetic fields.
That's what. That's
after
what
a magnet
right
is
now.
Implanted
yes.
underneath the epidermal layer of the skin, nerves go around the magnet as the skin heals. The magnet pushes against magnetic fields. Fields produced by electronic devices in the surrounding area, pushing against the nerves and giving a sixth sense of magnetic vision. Some people prefer to have multiple implants and several fingers in order to get a more 3D view of the magnetic fields around them. But one magnetic implant is enough to be able
wow.
to feel magnetic fields. This means that people with magnetic implants have sensations of running electricity motors, electronic circuits, appliances, and even wires.
Okay, when I was saying about getting into something new and trying something new and like food for the soul and stuff, I draw the line at this,
not this.
Thing where you're getting
right,
like
surgery.
Implants and stuff like that. I personally would say don't bother doing that because I'm not really understanding like the point of it kind of thing, but... You know.
There are long-term effects. Neodymium right. magnets contain a large amount of iron by volume, and iron is easily corroded by common elements such as oxygen and water. Lewis, what is the human body mostly made of?
Oh,
it's water, Lewis! Magnet corrosion occurs when these elements become trapped inside during the encapsulation process, which can cause slow corrosive effect, or the encapsulation fails.
Well, no, I think
fails.
They have them sealed in like a silicon pack
but there's
or whatever,
a chance
so
of
like
we could have a baddie. Right here, like a supervillain is created. He corroded man, and he's like becomes corroded by this tiny neodymium. He hates neodymium because it's what it's done to him, and
he's
to
very
destroy
sick.
It. He's very sick. He drags himself around. Bits of him are always falling off.
Help me, he says.
I am Rust Man. Oh, sorry. Hand me that. I dropped my tooth. Yes, thank you. I will. Wait, there's my arm. Give that back. Hold still.
Yeah.
Magnet
so
man.
Is this something? Is this? Can we expect a new Bionic Lewis soon? Are you? You thinking of getting the implants? You
this
interested
is the kind
in
of shit
fields?
He would do. This is the kind of shit you would do, and you know
no,
it. Come on.
I've never had a piercing or an implant or a fucking... I've never had a tattoo. Do you know what I mean? I'm as white as
what
it
about
gets.
Those ass cheeks? Those aren't yours.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Those aren't real. Come on.
Who'd you get them from? That sweet
that
touch.
Junk,
you come
know,
on.
Special order, you know, from...
Special order.
From
oh, my God.
You know what, Lewis? That reminds me. Company. You what? Remember your personal trainer and your fucking broken relationship
oh.
that you had with your personal trainer?
Do I?
I have a personal trainer now.
Oh my
and
God.
I have started this week. at a nearby
gym. Same one?
No, thank God, because I...
Have you been all inappropriate with them, or...?
I have not.
Good.
And we have an excellent relationship, and he's a nice dude, and we chat, and he's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
So I cannot believe, like, throughout this... I've had two sessions. I've got another one tomorrow, and it's going to go on for 6 weeks, and I'm going to probably do another 6 weeks after that. I decided finally to get in shape because I sit around all fucking day. I'm 45. I see other men my age who are... you know, on the verge of a fucking heart attack. And I just thought it would be a good idea for me to be in decent shape. Right,
okay, sorry, sure. No. Sorry, let me stop you there. So you see other men who are even worse than you at your age,
yeah.
And you think, fuck, you don't see men who are in great shape at your age and like, oh man, I could be that guy. You know, crawling
through. There's got to be a good in-between where you're not about to die, but you're also not just spending all your time running.
That guy looks like shit. How old's he? 45?
Exactly. I don't want to be that guy who's like, just a, like, gaunt from all the working out and just looks like a skeleton with...
It's too much
with, like,
working out.
The muscles almost looks like a cyborg. Like, I don't want that. Yeah. I just want to be in decent shape and I want to have, like, good core strength and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Maybe some definition, and I'd like to get rid of my dad bod a little bit, tone down the gut a little bit, get a six-pack would be my dream.
Right.
All that kind of stuff, you know? And but without being, like, fucking bloated, gym bloat, like, you know, I don't want to be that guy. And I never would be that guy. So I just want to get in some decent shape. You fucking threw me off there. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah.
Personal trainer.
So about 10 minutes into the first session when we're cracking on, pops into my head the memory of Lewis just saying these awful things to his personal trainer.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how could you? Like, how could you? I just couldn't believe it. I didn't understand what your motivation was.
He's a complicated man. But, you know...
Like, I still do it. I still make embarrassing, stupid, dumb jokes.
We all do. We all do. I mean, if you make a lot of stupid jokes, which I think I'm confident in saying all three of us do that quite a lot, sometimes you're gonna fuck up. That's the way it is. You know, you're gonna miss that three pointer.
Yeah.
You're gonna score an own goal. You're gonna some other sports analogy. You're gonna do that, skid off the track or whatever. But you got to keep racing. You got to keep chucking and you got to keep shooting. That's the way it goes.
Well, I've got this thing now on my office computer, which is I saw it on Reddit Cool Guides, and it's a list of teas that you could take, like a tea for every occasion. And I looked down the list and I was like, I feel uneasy today. I'm gonna have, so it said peppermint tea. So I had a peppermint tea and I felt a bit
better.
But
what's that gonna do to shut your big yapper?
I don't know.
Up? Like, if you...
I don't know. I guess you just can't. Like, I can't go through life stepping on,
right.
Worried about stepping
here's
on eggshells. P flax.
I know. So sometimes the timing is crucial in a joke, right? All I'm saying is, especially if you're typing it, when you've typed it out, think of the worst response that there could be to that joke before you click send.
Yeah.
Just imagine it. And if you think, oh, that's way too elaborate, there's no way anyone's going to think that, then send it. But if you think, yeah, someone might take that the wrong way, then maybe don't. But if you want to maintain the Lewis image,
no, I don't
image,
think that is. I think the advice is know your audience, or at least be vaguely confident in your audience.
You keep
I mean?
Making your jokes, man. You'll find some people who will find them funny one day, and then that's when you'll know you're finally home.
Yeah.
You should try some of my jokes on your personal trainer.
On
your personal trainer. Show me your
nipples.
Hey,
what did you get up
to
last night? I fucked your mother.
Yeah.
You want to do some kettlebells or something?
I'm there for an hour with this personal trainer. How can you make that kind of joke? Because if it goes wrong,
hours, ages. I can't stay quiet for fucking 10 minutes.
Yeah,
so I've got to talk to these people about stuff.
But most of the time, I'm just
But we had a chat, and I sort of gauged that. You know, I obviously, I just didn't. It was fine. You know, you make these mistakes, don't you?
I don't think most people make that mistake, though. Like, I don't know that guy well enough. You didn't know your personal trainer well enough to claim that you'd fucked his mum. I'm just saying.
No,
well,
I mean, I don't
he
even
looked
make...
like he would have understood the joke. It's okay.
Even to people I know really well, I wouldn't make that joke.
He looked like he would have got it, people.
I ran my eye over him, and I gauged that I could tease him about having fucked his mum. Yeah, I was wrong.
It's a very common joke amongst our group of friends, so maybe I guess that's another motto of the story, isn't it? I've been joking about fucking people's mums since school. You know, that was like, it was, I was doing it at school. I was doing it when I was playing WoW. I was doing it yesterday with Hat Films. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been doing it with everyone my whole life.
Just remember.
And I just guess that he's never been in that circle and never experienced that.
But just remember
that right?
This guy, like, I always think about the situation is, could this person tell me to fuck off if I make a bad joke? Like, could they just say, oh, fuck off, I'm not having that. That's ridiculous. No, because, what, because fight me. He's your personal trainer, so he has to eat this shit.
Who does that?
Who does what?
Who tells anyone to... That's like a 0 to 60.
Yeah. No, if someone makes a joke like that, if someone that I barely knew told me that they... Oh, also, I was fucking your mum. I'd be like, fuck off.
I'm not trying to start a fight in a pub.
I would never
context.
Tell somebody to fuck off the back of a joke. But what I would do is I would avoid them for the rest of my life. After that, you know what I mean?
That's basically the same thing.
Yeah. I know, but it's just, it's less confrontational, I guess, which is the appealing part.
You guys are bigging this up to make it more than it was. You know, there is that I'm not going out doing that, provoking these things. You know, it is a considered social joke where we've been back and forth some amount of time to the point where I got a reaction I didn't expect, but even so, it was under the knowledge that, you know, we are similar age, similar interest, talking about similar things. You know, it's like, it's not that it wasn't out of the blue. It wasn't like we were in a bank queue and I just turned to the guy behind me and said, oh, I fucked your mum last night.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, that would be psychotic. Like, I mean,
it wasn't like that.
Just
exactly.
Saying, it was a very poor choice of audience for
that
joke.
It was poor. It was a poorly chosen decision.
I love how this
sure.
has come back. Like, we're actually mad at Lewis again for something,
again. For something that happened 3 years
a long time
ago
that we've already chewed him out for. Just randomly chewing him out again.
It's not random. It literally, like, it occurred to me the moment I started training. That was the first thing that I remembered, was Lewis being mean to his personal trainer. And how am I
guess the other
how could he do it? Like, man. It just made it even worse to me. Sorry,
we've got
Lewis.
Some new folks in the office as well.
Because
there's some new folks coming in. And one of the most awkward things that happened was...
Here we go.
This guy introduced... he's like, oh, hi. He introduced himself to me. And he said his name. And I half heard it, and I wasn't sure what it was. So I was like, oh, sorry, I missed your name. So he said it again. And it was a really weird name.
Right.
Okay. And I wasn't sure, again, what it was. And so I didn't want to say, how do you spell that? Or is that a weird name? Or like, what? Because it sounded like something, I don't want to say it.
Right.
But it sounded like a rude word. Okay. Wow. Like an insult almost.
Was it twat?
No,
was
but
his name
imagine
cunt
someone
face.
Had said to you. Imagine someone had said to you their name was
Mumfucker.
Twat. Right. Yeah. you're like, that's yeah, okay, cool. And then, like, do you know what I mean? And then they're like, that just threw me off, completely off kilter at that point. Like, I didn't know. I sort of tried to get back onto sort of small talk. You know, oh, how's it going? Have you, you know, what are you settling? No, have you tried any of the. The oat milk in the fridge, you know, I don't know, just the normal, the normal vegan kitchen chatter that we have in small talk social situations. But I'm so out of practice. I guess I never really, for the last sort of 10 years, have really met that many people in new people in awkward small talky social situations.
Oh, you met loads of people.
Hold a conversation.
Like you said, you're just out of practice. You're just out of practice.
Oh my God! And
so here's what you should have done if you were worried about the name. And you were worried that you'd misheard it.
Let me type it into chat, and you can tell me whether it sounds weird. Are you in general chat?
Yeah.
I think this is their name.
Oh my God. Okay.
How do you pronounce that?
Do you see where I'm coming from?
Apologies, man. Listeners. We can't share this name with you, but it if someone told me this was their name, you'd be like, your reaction would be the exact same as Lewis's. You'd be like, one more time, please? Sorry, just one more time? Because you'd want to make sure. So what I would do, Lewis, is wait until they'd left the room and then go and ask someone else. Or you can just look at the email list and see
who's
on there. Like,
I went to the board that we have where everyone's got pictures, but because they've just started, they don't have a picture yet with their name up there.
Just ask someone. Ask someone there and say, what was the name of that new person? Because it sounds like... And they'd be like, yeah, that is it. And you'd be like, okay, that's a tough one going forward.
Well, the weirdest thing was there was a second new guy starting, and his name was this.
What?
Which is like another really weird name. I typed it into chat again. And like, I wasn't sure whether that was a real name, or whether that was another nickname, or like, because it sounds like, and so that just double weirded me out.
Are you not ever tempted to just hire people called, like, you know, Brian or
Steve,
Dave, or whatever? Like,
yeah. Well, we've got like four or five Toms
these,
already.
Are these their usernames? Like, are they giving you their Twitch usernames?
No, they are genuinely their real names. Yeah, totally. Because they were smartly dressed, normal. This is a normal environment, office environment.
We're just old, man. I'd never heard of either of these names.
I've never heard of them.
They sound like the names of, like, grunge rappers. You know what I mean? Like, what is it? Grime MCs of some kind, rather than office workers. But yes, that's a tough one. I would just smile and then go and ask Harry and say, Harry, is that person's name really X? And Harry would go, yeah, mate. Yeah, totally. Okay, yeah. He's a lovely bloke.
So I guess I didn't hear it right, but yeah, well, or I did.
Interesting.
But who knows? That's my experience for this week.
Nice. And what an experience it was.
Had a nice time with some spiders at a warehouse. Thought about having a magnet implanted in my finger.
Yeah. Don't do the magnet thing, please.
Felt bad about multiple social experiences that I had with other humans.
Isn't that just the human condition,
Lewis? And Smith get baked beans poured on him, which was absolute joy. And honestly, I couldn't have enjoyed something. I think that's the most happy I've felt in a whole year, just watching Smith get covered in beans.
That was the icing on the cake for you after this tough year and a bit, right?
Overall, I'm feeling very, very positive.
Good.
Got my jab at the weekend. And yeah, like, it's all coming up, Lewis.
Oh, man. Holy crap. So, well, anyway, thanks for listening to our dumb podcast. And I guess we'll see you guys next time.
You could check out our Patreon if you want. And you don't have to, but the episodes go up there. And we're available, new episodes on Spotify every Wednesday. There you go.
Adios. Thank you very much. Amigos.
See you next week.
See you later. Bye.
Goodbye.